welcome to Cycle Systems Academy podcast, and I'm sure we got your pulses racing last week with our Whispering Bob Harris episode all about hubs. Now, all joking aside, there's been a huge amount of discussion about hubs on the Dial Up Your Cycle Tech Skills page that we run all about hubs after the podcast. People have been putting up photos of their cool hubs and everything. And in fact, we forgot to mention, you can actually buy a gold Paul components shell for your roll-off hub or your Sun Dynamo.
Awesome.
Yeah, so if you really want to pimp your ride, you can. But this week, I wanted again to really look at the fundamentals, because one thing as techies often fail to realize is for a lot of people who are into bikes or getting into bikes, or even people who race bikes for a living, haven't got a clue about what's going on with the bike. And one of the most hidden components, no pun intended, is the headset. So, John, when you were working as a mechanic, how many indexed headsets did you see?
Daily occurrence. Helpful self-centering, I think, would be another way to describe it.
So what's going on there?
Well, what happens essentially is a poorly adjusted headset, the ball bearings make a wee, they hammer out a wee niche for themselves in the races that they run in, which instead of, you know, a smooth steering action, which is what you want, essentially they click between each of those little niches that they've made, and your headset at that point is trashed.
Yeah, and of course, if you have, we'll talk about the different types shortly, if you have a more modern type of bike, that could mean the frame is trashed as well. So that's quite scary. Now, one thing that was interesting is our friends at Ceramic Speed. One thing I didn't actually know until I researched them again recently for the podcast is they are making ceramic bearing headsets now. So, of course, this is nothing to do with being able to steer more quickly with less friction for performance gains. This is all about the longevity of ceramic bearings. And, you know, their headsets are guaranteed for 5 years, just like their other coated ceramic bearings. So the headset then, it's not about going faster. It's not necessarily about looking cooler, but we'll come on to that. It's just a functional part of your bike. It holds the forks into the stem and the bars. It connects your bars up with the steering, basically, and just holds it all together. And the most important thing as a mechanic or as an enthusiast who wants a new headset, because even though we'll tell you to go to your local bike shop, you're probably going to go and order it online.
Yeah, don't do that.
It's so, so easy to order the wrong one. Now, what we use at Cycle Systems Academy, of course, is a plethora of demo bikes, loads of different headsets and components. But for reference, we reference a nice Park Tool article that I'll put in the show notes on the website. And it is a really useful article by Kelvin, because it shows you all these different headset types, the types of frame they work with, and it has cutaways so you can see. And the other link you're going to get is the shiz. And you've got to have your shiz, which is Cane Creek's standard headset identification system. Now, John, you probably remember the days in the trade when Cane Creek was such a joke, they were known as Cane Creek, and they weren't really that highly thought of. Whereas in the last 10 years, they've really, I think, saved us as a mechanical industry, because they've developed this system of measuring forks and frames that everyone, almost everyone, uses to actually standardize the measurements of headsets.
No, absolutely. I mean, Cane Creek were the Novatec of headsets. they were what were chosen for cheap OEM stuff. And when you saw the headset, you knew it was going to be okay, but it wasn't very exciting. Whereas you're exactly right. They're one of the places where whatever you need, you can be confident they make a part that'll do the job for a headset.
And to be honest, if you're not that keen to be, dancing naked with your vernier calipers, as every good mechanic does, you can actually go onto the Cane Creek headset finder, type in your bike and model and year, and it will tell you the shiz number and even obviously give you links to products.
I tell you, but the most exciting thing you've said today is about the Ceramic Speed headset, because I'm thinking about a headset that could conceivably outlast your bike. It's a rival for the old Chris King.
Well, that's it. And we'll talk about the Chris King headset shortly with a little hark back to our friend Stephen Faves from Cycling the Six. But if we look at the bikes that I rode back in the 80s, you rode back in the 1880s. Yeah. They didn't have these incredibly nice, easy-to-service headsets that we have now. They had what was called the threaded headset. And they're very easy to spot because you've got the old-fashioned kind of quill stem, which slots inside the forks, Robert, and slides on top of the fork steerer.
Yep.
A lot of, you know, people who are romantic about the old-fashioned bikes, they'll still spend £150 on a Tinelli quill stem to go with their classic steel Condor. And, you know, they've got a certain appeal, and one of the appeals is that those stems are very easy to adjust the height of.
Yep.
But what you need to be aware of is most people who have those stems these days, it's on comfort-type bikes, city bikes, and they want the bars as high as possible. And they raise the quill stem, because you only need one spanner or Allen key to do it, way too high. Because if the stem's too high, it's just going to break or even fall out of the fork steerer at the top of the frame. So all of these quill stems have a minimum insertion mark, which is very clear and must be adhered to. The headset itself, you needed special headset spanners for, which looked like oversized cone spanners.
Yep.
And I remember seeing in cycling magazines in the 80s, what to take on your cycle tour and be a tool roll, and there'd be headset spanners in there.
I have two miniature headset spanners that I used to take to them.
You cut them down and drilled them out?
I did, yes.
Well, it makes sense because they're big. I mean, you could use them in a pub fight quite convincingly, I think, especially the 40mm ones. And essentially, it's just like adjusting the hub or any of your bearing systems, but it's quite fiddly. And all of these systems in the old days were loose ball bearings or bearing cages. They weren't that well sealed. So they required quite regular maintenance, mm-hmm. and it was quite in-depth and painstaking maintenance. If you had a threaded system which was poorly made, of course, the sealing would be worse and the maintenance would be higher. Now, just for your entertainment, just like we talked about with the hubs, everyone made their own standard. There was an Italian one-inch standard, not to be confused with the Campagnolo one-inch standard, not to be confused with the British one-inch standard, which itself shouldn't be confused with the Raleigh one-inch standard. And it's all about TPI, threads per inch. So the Raleigh standard had 26 threads per inch, just like their bottom brackets, whereas the standard British was 24, just like the bottom brackets, and so on and so forth. Another link I'll put on is wonderful Sheldon Brown's headset crib sheet for all of these old-fashioned threaded headsets. So even if you come across an East German one-inch Jan Ulrich special frame, you will still be able to see the measurements, basically, but you will need to burn your calipers for that. So essentially...
Back in the day, I think I used vernier calipers on the tops of forks more often than I did on any other part of the bike to make sure the crown race would fit.
That's right, yeah. And basically, back in the mid-90s, I can't remember the exact year, and I can't remember the chap's name, a young lad rocked up at a British mountain bike race and said, "Watch this." And he took out a 5mm Allen key and dropped the forks out of his bike. And in the back of his shed, he'd invented the threadless headset, or the A headset, as it was called at the time, which is the headset almost every bike has now. And this, of course, is very easy to see because there's no big nuts on there like you would see on a threaded system. And it's got a very different type of stem that slides onto the fork steerer.
Yep.
So, John, when did you start seeing these threadless headsets and forks?
I would say 1992, 93. Mm-hmm. And it was a long time before we saw them on pro bikes. I mean, I remember truly being shocked seeing one on Inderain's bike fairly late in his career. But by 94, they were the dominant system on mountain bikes. And actually, by that point, on most road bikes as well. So early to mid-90s is where they came in. And the advantages were so obvious for, you know, particularly mechanics assembling bikes, the servicing, all that kind of stuff, that they gained traction very, very quickly. For probably 2 or 3 months, people were, you know, it's a kind of flash in the pan thing. But within 2 or 3 years, quill stems were consigned to history in touring bikes.
And do you remember the last Tour de France that was won on a quill stem and threaded headset?
I'm going to say 95, but that's just a guess.
You're cold.
Where is it?
99.
Oh, of course, Armstrong 97. On the OCLVs.
So, you know, this, for the time, incredibly futuristic-looking OCLV frame, carbon, you know, frame, which was incredibly exotic at the time. The only other carbon frames in the Peloton at the time were the Look 285 and the Conargo C40, mm-hmm. which were both amazing bikes, but the tubes looked like one-inch steel tubes out of carbon. And the Trek was just like, wow, look at this. But yes, if you look at it, Armstrong's on a quill stem and a threaded Chris King headset just for that year only.
And it's because they were ahead of their time, because they would have invested so much money in the moulds, they couldn't change it, so they had to stick with the quill stem until the moulds were obsolete.
Yeah, yeah, basically. And of course, Trek really got transformed by Armstrong's success from quite a small company to one of the big, big hitters. So, you know, they didn't even have a time trial bike in 99 or 2000.
Yeah, Lightspeed Blade.
A Lightspeed Blade, yeah. And it wasn't until 2001 they got their own CT bike. But we digress, not like us.
Yep.
So these threadless systems then were all originally on a one-inch fork, and that means the part of the fork that goes through the frame, which we call the steerer. And when people started looking at stiffness on a bike, especially with aluminium and carbon, because if you overbuild steel, it's just really heavy. But with aluminium and carbon, you can make everything bigger to create a stiffer platform without sacrificing your lightweightness. So essentially, people came up with a 1 1/8 inch steerer, so 1/8 inch wider. I'm assuming the fact it's imperial rather than metric, it was an American invention from the mountain bike world. So many innovations are coming from the mountain bike world, and even the gravel bikes are starting to look like mountain bikes now in terms of geometry and even suspension. But essentially, the threadless system started to become available in 1 inch and 1 1/8. And then people were also, and still do, make threaded in 1 inch and 1 1/8. So for quite a while, there were four types of headsets. And then the downhillers, of course, they've got to max it out and go full gnarly, had a 1.5 inch or 1.5 inch headset. So there were five standards, as it were, for forks, frames, and headsets.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's something in a headset called a stack, which is how much the headset stacks above the head tube in the frame. You've probably all seen professional riders' bikes where the stem is slammed right down onto the frame, although a bit less these days with modern bike fitting. But if your headset has got a large stack on it, you can't do that. So when you're ordering a headset, you might have one with precisely the same measurements and is compatible with the frame and the fork. But if the stack is wrong, then you may have an incorrect position. And in addition, your fork steerer, when you fit it, you fit a new fork to the frame, does have to be cut by a skilled mechanic to the exact right size to fit. Yeah. And if your steerer has been cut to a very low stack or zero stack headset, and you buy one with a 20 mil stack, you're going to run out of steerer and it won't fit. So already we've got six variants, and that's keeping us up to date to about the year 2000. So when people wanted to look at extra efficiency and or making bikes look cooler, what did they do, John?
I'm sorry, I'm still having flashbacks to Standard Avenger and Evolution, which was the kind of trademark names of the various sizes of a headset back in the day. That's probably before your time, Sean.
I was going to say, you've completely lost me there. I thought you were talking about 1950s kids sci-fi characters in black and white TV.
Standard was a one-inch headset. Avenger was 1 1/8, and Evolution was 1 1/4. My God, I've taught the great Sean Lally something.
That is something, yeah. Yeah, brilliant. So, yeah, of course, 1 1/4 as well. We didn't even mention that. The 1 1/4 inch as well as the 1.5.
Oh, man. Sorry, I've completely sidetracked both of us there. What were we talking about?
I'm talking about kids' TV characters. Now, so we're just getting into the variants, but basically, when bike manufacturers wanted to sell new bikes, I mean, increase the efficiency of bikes, or both, to be fair, both, what they realized, well, there were two developments which happened sort of concurrently. But the one that came first, I'd say, is the integrated headset. So if we look at the headset system, basically, the cups where the bearings sit, whatever sort of bearings they are, used to always be pressed into the frame with a headset press, not a block of wood and a vise. Okay. And you press them into the frame. So they were the bearing surface. So if that bearing surface got worn out or damaged, you'd pop them out with a head cup remover, aka rocket tool, and then you'd put new ones in. And it would be a few pence, that'd be threepence, laddie, or, you know, a few pounds, but no big deal. The bearings themselves, we can talk about later, and then you would have the crown race on the fork and another cone on the top of the headset for the full system. And then whatever preload system you have to make sure the bearings don't rock around or crunch, essentially.
Yeah.
So what they did, the frame manufacturers, was integrate the cup into the frame so they could make the frame that little bit bigger for stiffness. It would look cooler, maybe the most important thing on the shop floor, because that bearing cup disappeared inside the frame. And it does give a fantastically clean-looking front end of the bike. And then the bearings, often cartridge bearings now, would just drop straight into the frame. And of course, it's lighter as well as less stack. So there's lots of performance benefits there. But if you've got a 1,500-pound carbon frame and you run your headset loose and the bearings rock around and smash around, imagine on these Devon lanes where I live, or off-road especially, what's been damaged?
Your frame.
The bearing surface, which is the frame.
Yeah.
So if you want performance as ever, you need to be on top of your maintenance. You need preventative maintenance, and you need to leave no stone left unturned. So essentially, the fully integrated systems are fantastic. You only need an Allen key to service the whole lot, but you can really go wrong very easily. I've got quite a famous story from one of our graduates who was a tradesman. He worked in painting and decorating for a couple of decades, exceptionally skilled at his trade. And he'd always loved bikes. And like many people who train with us, just said, right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to work in the bike industry. He fully invested in level two, level three training, and then got a job at a really highly respected bike shop in South London, run by an ex-professional rider, really highly regarded place. And he was doing a full service on some full Campagnolo Super Record Eddie Merckx bike, you know, $5,000-$6,000 worth of bike. And he was popping off the forks, and the head mechanic went, "Oi, Charlie, what are you doing?" And he said, "I'm servicing the headset." And the mechanic just grabbed the bars and twisted them round. And he said, "Is it grinding? No, then leave it." And of course, the poor customer's paying probably £200 with parts for this full service. And that is so dangerous, not just, you know, downright immoral.
Yeah.
But it's dangerous because the frame could be damaged. But more importantly, with a 300-gram carbon fork, with a headset which contains aluminium compression bungs, all sorts of parts like the stems which clamp onto the carbon steerer, the slightest bit of damage or vibration, or even just use over time.
Comes back to what Matt said about it being a safety inspection as much as anything else.
Exactly. And we've seen time and time again on students' bikes, when they finally learned how to service a headset, they bring their bike in, they pop it open, and the steer is about to fail catastrophically. We've seen bikes where literally the stem is imprinted onto the carbon steerer.
Yeah.
We've seen scores and lines on the fork where it's about to be sliced in two. And if you just go, "Is it grinding? No, leave it and eat some jellied eels," it's absolutely terrifying. And what really is scary is I'm a member of a lot of these professional bike mechanics forums on Facebook. You get a lot of experienced mechanics saying, "Oh, I don't do any preventative maintenance. I don't use a torque wrench." Funnily enough, the guy was based in France who was saying that. You know, I think their mechanics are as old school as their racers.
Yeah. Seriously, though, it is all about safety. I think a 300 gram fork, if it goes, will not go gracefully, and your face will meet the tarmac.
Exactly. You know, my top end bike, I strip it every autumn, and I build it every spring, and every part gets inspected. And I had some gorgeous look bars, completely pimpy look bars. They were like a road going version of the amazing track bars they use, with all incredible graphics on the top. And I love those bars, but after five seasons, even though everything was correctly torqued and used in the carbon prep paste, etc., just riding that bike over the Devon lanes and everywhere else I'd been meant that there'd been damage gone into the carbon.
Yep.
And it looked incredibly surface. You know, people, oh, that's just the lacquer or just the paint. It looked like the surface, but my experience told me it needed an ultrasound scan.
Yeah.
So I sent it off to Carbon Bike Repair up in Surrey. And they ultrasound it, said, no, they're dead.
Yep.
So if you're going to run super light kit, it's often going to have a shelf life. And that's fine. I mean, that bike is my son's bike now. I put a shorter stem on. And he's got a 5.9 kilo bike for riding these crazy inclines we've got in Devon. Let me tell you, it really does make a difference. It might not in Cambridgeshire, but it does in Dartmoor. So essentially, you really, really got to inspect all of these parts. One of our graduates put up a photo on Instagram yesterday of a carbon handlebar where someone had clamped on a tri bar to it, you know, extensions for a time trial. And again, it was crushed.
Yeah.
So it was the fact he was methodical enough to remove the tri bars. You know, you got to remove the tri bars, remove the shifters, remove the stem from the bar, remove the bar from the fork. You must inspect this stuff at least once a year.
Yeah.
If you want to be safe on your bike, you cannot expect to have this Tour de France level machine and ride it like a 1960s tourer. It's just not going to happen.
Actually, I mean, digress again. That's another place where we have to hammer home that the modern bicycle needs a torque wrench. Matt, again, your Allen key set is just an assembly set. If you've got a carbon seat post in, say, a steel frame, you know, and with steel components, you can torque it for as long as the day's, you know, long, and the thing will just stretch eventually. You over-torque that steel frame closure on a carbon seat post, then, you know, you could be wearing carbon fibre in your colon within a very short order of time.
Yeah, and it's not pleasant at all. No. So, essentially, you won't necessarily hear a crack or what have you. Also, it's just worth saying your torque wrenches themselves need to be calibrated annually. Yep. And if you drop them calibrated immediately to get an accurate reading.
Yep.
If you want to break into the bike trade, train your staff, or even learn some new skills just for fun, Cycle Systems Academy has a course for you. Our graduates come to us from all over the globe and train with us to gain the highest recognised cycle mechanic qualifications available. The bike industry supports and believes in Cycle Systems Academy, which means they'll believe in you too.
So essentially, the threadless headset then is a completely different type of frame. The fork may be interchangeable between the two. But one thing that we talked about, I think, recently was a carbon fork. This crown race I mentioned, which is the cone, we smash those on to metal forks with a sliding hammer. And, you know, you really got to whack them in order to get them on.
One of the most enjoyable jobs in the workshop.
It is, yeah. And in fact, we've even got crown race reamers, which will ream off minuscule amounts of metal so you can fit perfectly the crown race. And they're quite a nice tool to use as well. But on carbon, you don't want that sort of impact. So people started doing integrated carbon crown races to the fork, which makes every bit of sense. It removes about £500 worth of tools needed, or £1,000 with the reamer. But it does mean, again, the bearing surface is the fork, which is an expensive part. So we have got an expense and a potential issue with high performance. So essentially, you've got your integrated carbon crown race, your integrated carbon cups from the frame. So as a compromise, what the bike manufacturers came up with was the semi-integrated, aka zero stack system, which is as cool looking as an integrated headset, but it has cups pressed, but now inside the frame, not outside the frame. This adds a few grams to the whole setup. It does add a millimeter or so of stack, if that matters to you, but it means the bearing surface now is this cup. However, in my experience, an aluminium cup into a carbon frame, especially, can actually lead to as many problems as it solves.
Yeah.
Especially if your bike shop has been going, is it grinding? No, leave it. Because what we've seen is these aluminium cups which actually seize into the frame. Although, to be fair, so can a stainless steel bearing. And in fact, I once went off to lunch and a student said, I'm going to service the headset on my frame. And I came back and he'd got a rocket tool out to rocket tool out a headset bearing, which should have come out with his fingers, you know, because it had seized in there after years of riding. And it's why you shouldn't ride your nice bike through the winter as well. And what he'd done is he'd hit the bearing with a rocket tool, which is the head cup removal tool, and it had ripped out the carbon cup in the frame as well.
Yeah.
And he said, can I get a new one?
No.
New frame.
Actually, I mean, talking about Armstrong, I know we're not allowed to talk about him. The first integrated Fork Crown race I ever saw was in a Trek 5900, which was his lightweight variation on the Madone for his climbing bike in 91, was it?
Well, that was before 2001.
No, 2001, yeah.
So that was when they had the 5500 for the normal stages and the 5.9 for climbing. And then the Madone, which I think was 2002 or 3,
was the subsequent bike.
And the reason it was very traditional geometry is because everyone else was on compact and semi-compact. But Armstrong, being the sort of new man that he is, he said, I'm not riding a girl's bike.
Yeah, wanted a proper bike.
Yeah, what a tip. So essentially, we've got now these external headsets, internal headsets, and we've got the semi-integrated or zero-stack headsets, as well as our threadless and threaded headsets, and our 1-inch, 1 1/8, 1 1/4, and 1.5 headsets. So already, there's quite a lot of different sizes. In addition, the zero-stack headsets had a lot of different sizes of head tube with different cups in them to bring it down to the 1 1/8. And Cane Creek and Campagnolo developed their own standard for the angle of the bearings. So the Cane Creek standard being 36 degrees angle on the frame and fork and bearings, and Campagnolo 45.
Super important. You can buy a bearing that will slide in, but will trash the frame because it's the wrong angle.
Exactly. You can get angle finders for your phone and such now, but normally the spec sheet on your frame and fork will say as well. So essentially, there's quite a lot of different, sizes already. But then, to increase performance, again, but also add to the complexity.
I know where you're going.
Yep, tapered head tube.
Yep.
And the first ones, again, were in mountain bikes, as far as I'm aware. So this is where the head tube, that very small front tube on the bike, tapered to be wider at the bottom, because the areas of greatest load on a frame where they flex a bottom of the head tube, top of the fork, and the bottom bracket. So if you look, say, like we've got one of the original Madone, like 2002-3 Madones, and we've also got some 2012 and some more recent ones. And the differences are the bottom brackets are bigger and press fit, boo, and the head tubes are bigger and tapered. So if your head tube is 1 1/4 inch at the bottom and 1 1/8 at the top, you need a different fork. You need a different headset.
Yeah.
Although some companies would do a step-down headset, which would allow a tapered fork to be used with a straight head tube frame. So now we've got different tapers, 1.5 or 1 1/4 at the bottom to 1 1/8 at the top. We've got different angles. We've got different sizes. We've got different types in terms of semi-integrated, integrated, etc. So you see there's now 120 headsets in the catalogue. Really?
No, I mean, seriously, what I want to say to people here is have some compassion for your local bicycle workshop, because the investment in parts, and before you even get to stocking expensive bits like suspension forks, for example, the investment in parts is not insignificant. So if occasionally they go, I'll have to order that in, just nod and say thank you.
Exactly, because they'll order the correct part in. Well, yeah. They will if they've been trained with us anyway. There's bike shops out there that really haven't got the first clue, it's worth saying, and you'll probably notice that pretty quickly. So for the bike shops as well, what they have is a lot of very expensive tools for the metal frames, and these are headset reaming and facing tools. So these are cutting tools which will actually smooth off both the outside of the frame, which is the facing, and the inside of the frame, the reaming. Because sometimes a head cup just won't quite fit, or the bearings won't quite sit flush. And that might be, often it's paint or rust, sometimes slightly off manufacturing. And you need to invest in these very expensive tools to smooth everything off to make it work. It's a bit like the disc brake facing tools that we've talked about before. Yep. Now, these faces are £150 to £250 each. And you need one for all of these different sizes of frames. And many manufacturers have got their own standards for those zero stack frames that we talked about. So even we at CSA don't have all of them, but we have got 1 inch. And when I say 1 inch, there are different sizes of 1 inch, remember. We have got 1 1/8, which is straight. We've got Cane Creek and Campagnolo tapered. And we've also got upper and lower sizes because they tend to have a deeper angle in the lower. So it's thousands of pounds. You know, the difference between a mobile mechanics kit and a shop's toolkit is often £3,000-£4,000 worth of tools. And it's all of these reamers, facers, tappers. So if you are a mobile mechanic or if you're a home mechanic, just pop down your local bike shop and they'll do a bit of reaming or facing for you, normally for around £30 per job. Which, even if it takes them 2 minutes to do, they've invested thousands in order to do that. So definitely a big smile for that one. Obviously, don't try and ream a carbon frame. Now, no names mentioned, but I did get an email off Road CC once saying, why can't they face off this carbon frame? Which was kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah, no, just don't. People see that transition from steel and aluminium to carbon. So many experienced mechanics made so many huge mistakes. I shiver just thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, there's all these different types of headsets. And like I said, if you want, I'm not going to get into how to do this because that's a podcast in itself. And in fact, our friend Scott Didenbach has done two such podcasts on exactly how to measure the SHIS, the standard headset identification system. But essentially, you can go onto the Cane Creek website or just Google Cane Creek SHIS. And it shows you all the different parts of the frame and fork, and it's only four parts actually, to measure to generate your SHIS number. And that means you can order any headset from any manufacturer. If you use that SHIS number, you know it's going to fit.
Yeah.
That naughty Chris King, Mr. Renegade, won't use it. Don't know why. He won't go along with Shimano's disc brake lacing patterns either. He likes to be a rugged individual. Yeah, basically. He probably goes to Starbucks with a gun on his back. In fact, I'm sure he does. Sorry, Chris, but you know what I mean. He wants to be his own man there. So essentially, what we've got is these massive variety of systems. They're quite straightforward to fit if you've got the right tools, but you will break your bike if you don't have the right tools.
Yep. I mean, what you have to do is measure. That is, if you thought hubs were complicated, you know, hubs are really simple compared to headsets and even relatively common bikes. I mean, I was doing some work a few months ago on a friend's Boardman bike. You still have to take the trouble and measure. You know, the thought that you can go into a shop now and say anything is standard when it comes to hubs and headsets is a fallacy. The joke used to be about, you know, seat pins, where people would come in and say, I need a seat post, and you'd say, what size? And they go, oh, you know, just standard. And that's what headsets are now. It's all about measure, and make sure you've got the right bits.
It is, and if you're buying a bike off one of the online manufacturers, like, you know, Canyon, for example, you can only get the headset parts from Canyon.
Yeah.
Because what we've seen now is another level of performance. If you look at almost all of the modern aero bikes, at least, they've all got a proprietary fork. So a standard fork won't fit. Proprietary headset, proprietary stem, even. So essentially, everything has to be bought in from that manufacturer, and you're normally going to pay a premium for that.
Yeah.
So while I adore, say, the new Trekamonda, despite the fact Trek's a toxic brand nowadays, and I wouldn't buy one, but essentially I adore the new Trekamonda, but you've got to be aware you're paying for that performance with specificity of the parts. So it's not what you want on a touring bike, is it?
No, and the other thing is for the longevity of your bicycle. When you bought a high-end steel bike or aluminium bike or traditional carbon, actually carbon not so much and aluminium not so much, but steel, you could expect it to last a very, very long time. You know, and that wasn't the case with carbon and aluminium race bikes because they were built to be light and fast. Durability was probably the final consideration other than being strong enough to get through the race. If you're buying a high-end aero bike now, you cannot expect to be able to get parts for that a decade down the line. And it's not designed to last that long. You know, it's designed for a purpose. So be aware that that huge investment you're making won't last you as long as your, you know, your hand-built Chas Roberts would have back in the day.
Yeah, I'll ride a lot nicer though, let's be honest.
Oh, we could argue about that for weeks, man. That's another podcast in itself.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. I think steel is real. It's real heavy, real flexible, real rusty, real old-fashioned.
You're lucky we're not in the same room. There would be violence now.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I've got my podcast microphone to defend myself. But anyway, let's talk about an idea, a daft idea. An adventure, a man's plan to visit his son. What am I on about, John?
We've chatted probably more on this podcast and, you know, in the Take the Mic Tuesday than on the Velocast about my plans to ride to China. And I've gone public with it now. I've wanted somewhere that wasn't the Velocast for a while for my chat about music, politics, all that kind of stuff. But the impetus to start johngalloway.online, which is the website, is the trip to China. So I've now gone fully public. You can visit there. It's only two pages just now, just a brief outline of the plan. It'll become much more. You know, our discussions about equipment will have their own page. Coaching stuff from Caroline Stewart to CSC coaching will have its own page. Local routes around Peebles that I use for training will have their own page. All of that kind of stuff. And once the trip gets going, it'll be where you'll be able to track where I am, blog. There'll be a podcast about the trip, which will probably start actually next month with talking to Caroline about training. So my new home, other than the venerable velocast.cc, is johngalloway.online.
So get yourself over there, guys. It's got the usual fantastic Velocast graphics by Scott Aurora as well. And we are hoping to get Steve Fabes from Cycling the Six back on the podcast soon.
Yeah.
Steve famously cycled 87,000 miles around the world, and he's just had a book come out all about it. So he's becoming a bit of a star. Steve has also been on the front line and the work against COVID as well in London. So it's going to be really amazing to speak to him about his life and his work and what's happening. But famously, when Steve rode around the world, one part of his bike lasted, apart from the Santos steel frame, the only single component that didn't need replacing, and this includes his roll-off hub, he needed three of those, was the Chris King headset.
Yeah. I mean, I've got one-inch Chris King headsets in my parts bin that I won't throw away because they're still perfectly good and they're 30 years old.
Yeah, I mean,
they're amazing.
Yeah, they're fantastically expensive. They work exceptionally well. One thing I will say is I had a steel mountain bike, Rock Lobster, for years, and I only got rid of it when the modern mountain bike geometry ruined it for me. Once I'd ridden the Nikolai Geometron, I got back on that Rock Lobster 853, and it felt like a kid's bike.
I don't think I've laughed as much as when you did was it a blog post or was it just on social media where you posted a picture of the two side by side? And the Rock Lobster looked like a Victorian high wheeler.
Yeah, it was incredible, the difference. Well, that bike, when I built it in 2009, had a Hope bottom bracket, Hope headset, Hope Pro 2 brakes. You get where I'm going here.
Yep.
basically none of the Hope Pro 2 hubs. The hubs needed, you know, occasional bearing replacement, but the headset and bottom bracket, in a decade of riding it all over Europe and through Devon winters, never needed bearing replacement.
Yeah. No, I mean, a good headset is hideously expensive and has always been hideously expensive back in the day. And that, but I am quite excited about the Ceramic Speed one, because I could see building up a modern bike and getting the expectation of length of service that we've always had from the likes of Chris King. I mean, that's potentially a big step forward.
Yeah,
it'll be hideously dear, but they always are.
Indeed, indeed. So, I mean, for me, Hope is the best balance of it's not crazy expensive, but the performance is right up there. You know, it's why I've got the Hope RS4 hubs on one of my bikes and, you know, really love those.
And they'll make you any part for anything they've ever made.
Exactly.
They made me end caps for an ultra lightweight hub about in 1991. And they made them 3 years ago.
Brilliant. So that's a wrap for now. So thanks so much for joining us. Come on to Dial Up Your Cycle Tech Skills on Facebook and join us there. And John, look forward to talking more about China soon.